It's hard to know for sure what the most effective ways of engaging men and working effectively with them in men's behavior change program, because there are no guarantees about specific outcomes in terms of stopping them from using violence, and increasing their sense of empathy for their partners or the women that they're harming, whether that's current or former partners. And one thing that we know about men who come to men's behavior change programs is that some men might fight the content and the facilitators in the program from the beginning right through to the end, and some men might be on board from the start and appear to be ready to change and wanting to change and might be sincere in their desire to never use violence again in their relationship. Or any abuse tactics. And some men may start off very defensive and aggressive and then soften along the way and start to engage with the facilitators and the content in a way that seems more where they have a greater sense of interest and where they have had some sort of realization about the impact of their abuse, and their shame starts to kick in. So really, what I've learned about men's behavior change programs, and this is true in mainstream groups with heterosexual men who use violence against women and children, as well as the groups I facilitated with gay, bisexual, and queer men who are in relationships with men, where there may or may not be children present, is that these groups are largely a consciousness-raising space, reflective space, where we as facilitators will bring in particular themes and experiences of women to present to the men and to see how they respond and start to examine and ask questions about their responses. For example, when we try and point out to the men that violence is a gendered issue, that men's violence against women and children is a social and cultural problem, not just here in Australia, but globally, some men might understand that intellectually, and some men will be so connected to their own sense of victimization of having gone through the criminal justice system that they'll completely reject that idea and work really hard to convince the facilitators and other men in the group that they, in fact, are the true victims. Even when they come into programs with assault charges and they may have been incarcerated as a result of their violence or even breaching intervention orders, that they will still work hard to convince everybody else that they, in fact, are the true victims, and she is a liar and deceptive and a perpetrator. So in terms of specific approaches, it's hard to know, but we do know that this view may not be shared across all agencies and across all groups or even within some teams, but using a victim-centered position is the most respectful way to honor women's stories and the advocacy that we perform in the room with perpetrators. So, in a sense, facilitators are the advocates of partners, of the women who have been harmed, or in the queer group, it's the gay male partners, the victims who have been harmed by men's violence. And this means that we need to know about the daily realities of victim survivors' experiences, not just of incidences of violence, but also their experiences of coercive control, about how their daily lives have been impacted and influenced by the abuse and their fear of further incidences of abuse happening. And this might mean that she might continually be on the lookout for his moods and changes in his level of agitation towards her or the children. She might work increasingly hard to manage the children's behavior so that he doesn't feel irritated or upset by the noise that the children are creating at home, because he will usually target her and blame her for being a poor mother or incapable of managing the children, or even to manage the way difference comes up in their relationship, a difference that moves away from agreeing with his views, his interests, his priorities, which may result in consequences for her. So she starts to manage all of that. And that stuff is really invisible to the perpetrators. When we try to talk to the men about the impact of coercive control and how in a very ritualized daily way that she may perform in ways at home that may increase her own sense of safety, that men are often surprised to hear this. They will often reject this notion, and some men might even switch off and not pay attention, not absorb it. While other men may feel very shocked at the idea that the assault that happened, his physical violence towards her that happened, say, 2 years ago, where she was hospitalized, where an intervention order was served against him, and that intervention order might have expired now, but he was charged with assault, and that they've worked hard, they've engaged in services, and that they've stayed together, they've got children. He's probably done a men's behavior change program before at the time, and he's come back a second time for maybe whatever, for some other reason, and he might be convinced that because there's been no physical violence or nothing like the abuse that happened 2 years ago, that as a family that they've all moved on from it. So he might be very surprised to hear that that experience never leaves her emotional memory or the memory of the children, and all it takes is for them to hear something in his tone that will take them back to a time where he was the most scariest. So how do we work effectively with men? We bring in their stories, the women's stories, very strongly, victim-survivor stories, and we hold them with as much detail as possible and present them to the men. And we hope that this activates a sense of empathy in them, that who would want to live in the world where family members would experience you as frightening and scary? That thought will make most people very uncomfortable and quite distressed. So we need to kind of finesse that particular angle and that point that coercive control and the impact of abuse can be lifelong. And so we don't move on in family life as if abuse never happened, but we use the history of abuse. We bring the context forward, the history of abuse and the fact that abuse happened and she had never imagined she'd ever be assaulted or frightened of you, but she is and has been. And so how do we move on in family life in that particular context? Because men often feel quite ashamed of that, and they, in the absence of any overt or obvious forms of abuse or tactics of control, they are very keen to present family life as positive. And maybe for some men it is positive and everyone has moved on. But again, it can only take a strong disagreement or argument or something that might remind her of the children, of how he used to be, to take them back to that very experience, that very visceral experience of how scary he can be and may be again, even though he's promised never to be. So it's a hard question to answer about the most effective ways to work with men, but trying to get to their empathy and to try and enhance their experience of empathy is usually a way to get them to really center their partner's experiences and hear them and work with that as a framework for understanding his own behavior rather than his own intention to want to be a safe, good husband and father. Now, like I said, some men will fight this particular approach from the very beginning. Some men might fight it at the start and then have some sort of realization along the way and change and maybe move more open to hearing more about her experience. And some men might be ready to hear it from the start and do their best to absorb that story and to challenge their own sense of victimization just because they have had to attend a 20-week men's behavior change program, which is ultimately there to support them to be a safer person to live with.